from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up in forums next hour, Kai Rizdal has had a number of jobs, naval aviator, foreign service officer in China, bookstore employee, and even KQED intern. And since 2005, he's been the host of American Public Media's economic show, Marketplace. He'll join us in studio to do the numbers with his trademark humor, and we'll talk about, well, everything from credit default swaps to Halloween candy. Join us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Welcome to another hour of the Forum program. Over 5 million people turn on the radio each week and hear this.
From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
And that's the signature voice of Kai Rizdal. I always wondered about his name and finally asked him. It's Norwegian, goes back to roots in Bergen. You may remember, like we both do, that great fish place in Bergen. But The work pedigree includes shelving books at Borders Books in Palo Alto and working as an intern for this radio station, as well as being a host for the California Report. And it also includes flying naval planes from an aircraft carrier, working as a briefing officer for the Pentagon, and spending 4 years working in the State Department. In 2005, Kai Rizdal went on to host a half-hour American Public Media program on business and the economy, Marketplace, which is now heard by, as we said, over 5 million listeners each week on over 390 radio stations nationwide. This hour, we welcome Kai Rizdal to the program and back to KQED, a son come home.
It is so great to be here, I got to tell you.
You don't recognize half the people here.
No, I know. We were just talking about this. It's, you know, half new faces and then half folks who've been here for a while.
Well, you know, I was kind of fascinated by your background. I mean, I knew you'd been here, naval officer and briefing Pentagon people and all that sort of thing. Most of your listeners don't know about that stuff.
No, it's a long, convoluted story, which we can get into it at one point or another. But I am fortunate enough to have had a couple of careers in my life. I spent 8 years in the Navy right out of school. I spent 4 years in the Foreign Service after that. And then in 1998, found public radio, thanks to this radio station.
Found what Dan Shore once called the promised land, in fact, described it. But you started your program, actually the Morning Report program, in the summer of 2001, and right after that 9/11 occurred. And just let's talk about how that affected the way you view and the news and the news business and the business that you talk about on the news.
Well, there have been two cataclysmic economic events, right, in the past 11 and a half years that I've been in the marketplace. One is the financial crisis, obviously, and the other one was the changes wrought in this economy and this society by the attacks of September 11th. On first glance, what happened on September 11th is not your classic marketplace story. But then you step back and you say, wait a second, it's the financial center of the world. It is those two buildings were a representation of American capitalism. It is
Al-Qaeda on
even
Wall said
Street.
They wanted to hurt us that way.
I know. And so that day, if you go back and listen to David Brancaccio in the program that day, it is, and even though I wasn't involved on the afternoon show that day, I think it's some of our finest work because it was emotional, it was true, it was reaching, and it was absolutely the essence of what Marketplace is, which is a look at business and the economy through a lens that makes us understand why this stuff matters.
It's also a look, though, on the humorous side, and you don't shy from that side of things.
Well, seriously, I mean, if I lean into the microphone every day and say, leading economic indicators, we're up 3.2% today, my mother's going to turn off the radio, right? And if you lose your mom, then it's bad news.
So is your mom a regular listener?
Oh, yeah. She actually calls me afterwards and yells at me if she doesn't like something I've did, if she thought I was rude to a guest or whatever.
Well, you're not a bean counter. You leave that to Bloomberg, I think you said, right?
There is nobody,
writers.
There is nobody at Marketplace with an MBA. There's nobody there who's an economics PhD. It's not that we love business and the economy. We love the stories that they let us tell.
The stories behind the stories, I think, is the way you put it. And in fact, how do you come up with the notion of what stories? I know you work backwards, right?
I mean,
that's pretty well known. And you write your own copy, which is always impressive. Old school, few of us left. But the fact of the matter is, when you decide on stories, I mean, in terms of putting them This story first, right, or that story first. Right. How does that work?
We are, as everybody knows, only a half-hour broadcast, and that is, at the same time, a hindrance but an enormous help. Obviously, we would love to have as much time as we want to tell those stories, but the fact that we have 22 minutes and 30 seconds of content within that half an hour makes us really be discerning in what we do. We sit in the meetings every day and say, what can we bring to this story that makes it ours?
By the way, you mentioned not having an advanced degree in economics, but you do have an advanced degree in national security, which you mentioned.
Yeah. Well, when I was at the Pentagon, while I was in the Navy, I, thinking I might want to stay in the service at some point, got a master's degree at Georgetown in national security studies, because that's what you had to have to advance in the ranks.
Let's clarify a little bit what it means to work backwards.
Yeah. So when I sit down and write the show every day, right, and maybe this isn't what you're talking about, but as I work backwards, I start at the bottom of the broadcast and I write, as you said, my own copy. I think one of the things that makes Marketplace unique is that I can get the chance to sit there and write my own copy, because Marketplace is so heavily personality driven. I mean, I think you can hear in our broadcast, both on our morning show and on Marketplace, you can hear the influence of personality of the host, and we get to write our own copy. But I sit down every day and I write from the bottom up. I start with the last thing and I work my way to the top, so that right before deadline, I'm finishing those last couple of lines right at the top of the show.
Yeah, talk about personality. A little bit of jealousy on my part. Molly Ringwald, who was on the show when she published her short story book, said, Kai Ryssdal's voice is the best voice in radio. And not only that, but if I were married to him, I'd want him to say, show me the numbers every night in bed.
It's all in the microphones, Michael. We've got special microphones at Marketplace.
Well, I'll have to find out about those microphone secrets.
I'll have my engineers call your engineers.
Yeah, your people call my people. Let's talk about the personality or the tone of the show. Because I've heard so many descriptions, some irreverent, edgy, cutesy. Somebody said quirky. You even hear brash and snarky. And maybe our listeners will weigh in on how they would maybe just use one word to epitomize what they think the tone is. But it has a lot to do not only with your voice and who you are, and the people obviously behind the scenes, but it also has a lot to do with the music, which is mainly 30, 35-year-old demographic coming up.
Yeah, well, so our director chooses the music every day. I mean, we are known for our music. We get a lot of comments on it. But I think the tone of the show is intentional. We have strived for 25 years.
Strove?
No, come on. To sound the way we do, because we set out to be different. We built something that was unique in public radio intentionally, and it is an effort and a thought process that we do every single day, because otherwise, why would you listen to leading economic indicators rose 3.2% today?
A lot of people describe it as L.A. sounding.
I don't know. Yeah? I don't know. We are intentionally outside the Beltway for two reasons. One is that that's where the money was to start Marketplace 25 years ago. We're coming up on our 25th anniversary, by the way, in January. The money came from a radio station in Los Angeles, so that's where we went. But number two, and more to the purpose of it, we want to be about Wall Street, but not of Wall Street. We want to be about Washington and economic policy, but not of Washington and economic policy. And I think if you listen to a lot of what else you hear on public radio, and in fact in commercial broadcasting, there is a sense that people are captive by their own environment. And yes, you have to do the economic policy stories out of Washington, but it helps, I believe, and we believe, to have some distance.
Well, there's also the captivity of what I call the Eastern Bloc. I mean, around the Hudson and Washington, D.C.
You bet.
How really willing are you to do what I would call maybe hard-driving or even not so hard-driving political stories or stories that take a political position? I mean, when you're talking about Wall Street, you're also often talking about greed and immorality and, you know, all kinds of violations of one sort or another.
Mm-hmm.
And you tend to look at those stories or look away from them?
We look at them. We go at them when we can find a way to make it work and make it ours. We are not a political broadcast, and every single day, we say to ourselves, listen, this is a political story. If we're going to do it, we have to find our angle. I actually don't know what's on the show yet today, because I haven't talked to people in Los Angeles yet. I don't know if we're doing a story on Representative Mel Watt being nominated by the president potentially today. I don't even know if it's happened to run the FHFA, the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac regulator. That is at its core a political story, right? Because the GOP and the Senate's going to be opposed. There's all kinds of things. If we're going to do that, we're going to take a look at why Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac need regulation, what Congress has to do with that, and we're going to find the economic policy angle in it. There are a lot of ways into political stories, and we try to find them, or we're not going to do them.
You did team up with ProPublica, though, did stories on the undocumented.
Oh, yeah. Jeff Tyler did two of them on Marketplace the past couple of days and one on the morning show about how corporations and companies in near Chicago specifically but are using layers of subcontracting to avoid labor regulations, to take advantage of undocumented and sometimes documented immigrants in this country.
You've also taken the show to a number of offsites. Took it to China a few years ago.
Yeah, we did.
Which has a major impact on you. And
well, it was great. I mean, so I got the job. I got the job at Marketplace doing the afternoon show in the fall of 2005. And about 3 weeks after that, my boss at the time, J.J. York, came to me and said, "Listen, we've got this idea. We want to take the show to China." And I said, "That's good because I speak Chinese." And he said, "Yes, I know."
You were in Beijing.
I was in Beijing for the Foreign Service. I speak Mandarin and have lived there for a couple of years. And so we mounted what was at that point probably the biggest thing we've done. It took 8 or 9 months to get it set up. We did 2 weeks of live broadcast, one the first week from Shanghai for the morning show and then the second week from Chongqing. Having a look at what was then not yet the second largest economy in the world, but well on its way. And a key player in the American economy, whether we like it or not.
We're talking to Kai Ryssdal, who is the host of Marketplace, and we will certainly welcome your involvement in this discussion, particularly if you have a way to describe Marketplace in one word in terms of its tone. I put that challenge out to you. But also if you want to talk about a particular story and something that was covered on Marketplace that may have had some impact on you, we'd like to hear from you. In fact, let me give the number out now. You can join us at our toll-free number, and we invite you to do so. We'd like to hear from you, and questions or comments from Kai Ryssdal are welcome at 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. And you can also join the conversation by going to our website or our Facebook page or emailing us, forum@kqed.org. There's important economic stories, though, that you do cover, and there are some that just don't get enough coverage, clearly. I think you spoke once about really the unrealized losses of banks that are still on the books.
Oh, yeah.
And those kind of stories can be hard-hitting. I mean, you can go at them almost as muckrakers as opposed to just kind of giving the news type of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And believe me when I tell you, we've thought of ways to penetrate that thing. The core, the nugget of the story is this. All those toxic assets that we heard about in 2008 and 2009, they are largely still on the books. The banks have not been able to sell them out. The Federal Reserve is buying bonds, as we all know, some mortgage-backed securities.
And forgive me, no one has been prosecuted to date either.
Nobody to date has been prosecuted, and that's it's a ragingly open question as to why. Now, Wall Street's defenders will tell you, listen, we didn't do anything illegal. We were stupid, perhaps. We were naive, but we did not knowingly break the law. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Let that silence stand there. Actually, you said that your job is to keep listening.
My job is to keep listening. My job is to keep people listening to this broadcast. My job is to make sure that everybody who's there when the gong goes on the top of the broadcast is still there at the very end. If you listen to Marketplace on any given day, there will probably be one interview with me, maybe two. But most of the rest of it is me setting up our reporters and our contributors. There's probably less than 3.5 minutes of me in that show. What I do is I make people want to hear the stories that we have.
Well, that's what any radio program has to do to keep people. Mm-hmm. And your mother does stay with you most of the time.
She does.
Talking again with
most of the time.
With Kai Ryssdal. You know, I was looking at your website. You got sustainable stories. You got tech stories. And a lot of these, of course, overlap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But do you see them as being separate categories?
We see them as opportunities. I mean, sustainability is the economic word of the day, in this day and age. But we also do things like technology. Our reporter, Queen Kim, is based here in San Francisco. We do things like wealth and poverty, looking at the disparity in income and wealth and what that means for us as a society as we debate things like, I don't know, the tax code or the sequester. And what effect does this have on real people? These stories are all of a piece, but we have the ability and the luxury, thanks to our funding and the way we break things down, to have discrete teams of reporters on them to develop expertise and beats so that they can get really good at what they do.
How many of your staff?
We are, my guess would be about 15 full-time equivalent reporters. We've got probably a newsroom of 50-ish with producers and editors as well.
Do you try to, because the show sounds upbeat. I mean, mm-hmm. it's one of the ways that I would describe it if I were looking for a word. Dealing with a lot of doom and gloom.
It's really interesting you say that, because in the financial crisis, the deepest, darkest periods of it, in 2008 and 2009, when we all thought this was it, we were delivering the news of the day, what it was, which was grim and horrible and scary and unprecedented in living memory. I can't tell you how many comments we got from listeners who said, in essence, this is not what we listen to Marketplace for. We need the good news out of you guys. And we had a long and drawn out debate in the newsroom over what do we do? Unvarnish truth or make people feel better?
And came to what conclusions?
A happy medium. I was on the unvarnished truth side. There were others on the happy and feeling better side. And what we eventually wound up doing was telling people what was going on in real time and in real terms, but saying, listen, events like this are opportunities. There will be things out of this once it's over where we will say, you know what? That was a change for the better. This was a change for the better.
So you're not hearing so much about you're too pessimistic, too Cassandra-like, doom and gloom like you were.
Not so much anymore.
And yet, at the same time, you know, we're getting word from a lot of major investors that there was maybe a correction. Things look perhaps good, at least in numbers, but a lot of that has to do with the Fed, and maybe things aren't so good underneath. Maybe there's a kind of tsunami up ahead.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. So the Fed wraps up its meeting today. They will come out in about an hour or so and say we're not changing interest rates. But I encourage you and everybody to dissociate the stock market and what you hear from corporations in this country with the real economy, right? I mean, unemployment's at 7.6%. We're going to get the new number on Friday morning. And just because the Dow and the S&P are at or near record highs doesn't mean that a steel worker that we talked to on Marketplace a month ago who was worried about losing his unemployment check because of sequester, record highs on the Dow don't translate to this guy, right? He doesn't care. We're going to talk to him actually tomorrow for the broadcast. My guess is he's going to say, you know what? Congress is worried about air traffic controllers because they want to get home for spring break. And here I am dealing with an 11% cut in my unemployment check because Congress can't find a way to manage the economy.
Talking again, if you've just joined us, with the host of Marketplace, Kai Rizdahl, who's here with us in studio. And people come up to you at parties and ask you for advice on investments?
Yeah, they do. And I shut them down. And I always tell them why. The fact of the matter is that I don't manage my own money, let alone anybody else's money. And I do that for two reasons. One is, and this may be heresy, I don't actually have any interest in stocks and managing portfolios and all that stuff. My wife does, and so she takes care of all of our money. But the other one is it's just not right for me to have an investment portfolio when I've got 5.5 million people listening every week and 10 million to the whole Marketplace family broadcast. It's not right for me to have a microphone and be trading my own stocks. That's just wrong.
You ever think about with that kind of listenership? And ours is nowhere near that, but it's pretty high.
Well, and you guys are a huge portion of that. I mean,
but you know, you ever think about the fact if you could sell air?
Yeah,
like they do in commercial
That's
radio.
Right. That's right.
With those
what
numbers.
An opportunity.
Yeah. In terms of just investments and the like, let's talk about what you like. Yeah. I was reading. Well, you said you like Planet Money. Chris, yeah. Adam Davidson's a friend of yours.
Yeah.
You like cluster stock.
Oh, yeah. Business Insider. Yeah. John Carney, who started there and is now on CNBC, was a regular there for a while. It's the firm, the Business Insider firm, started by Henry Blodgett, late of Wall Street analyst fame, if you remember that. Adam is a good friend of mine. He started in business news on the overnights at Marketplace with me 10 years ago. We're really proud of what those guys have been able to do. And otherwise, I think you have to be just omnivorous in what you know, consume and go looking for in terms of staying up to speed on the news, as you know.
Here's Ellie, who says, huge fan of Kai on Marketplace. Please tell him that when he pulled that little stunt a couple months ago, stating it was his last day hosting so he could go work at a company that serves its employees beer every Friday, it was cruel.
Yes.
My friend and I were sweating it out all weekend to see if he'd return the next Monday. Naughty, Kai. Naughty. Never leave us.
Might I respond just very quickly? One is I got an earful about that from my executive producer, so it won't be happening again. But number two, the president of American Public Media, John McTaggart, heard me say that, and we're now going to get a beer cart Friday from him. So all's
Why'd
well
you do that?
Well.
What motivated you? You want to find out how much people love you?
I actually thought it was a funny little thing to do. And I didn't for a second imagine anybody would take me seriously. And for that, I apologize.
Explain what you did.
I said it was our final note on a Friday afternoon at the end of the broadcast. And I said something like, this final note on my way out, and I'm sad to have to say this will be my final broadcast at Marketplace. I've gone to find a new job at a place called whatever this name was. And here's why. They serve beer every Friday on the company dime. And of course, I made the
this is not April Fool's Day.
No. It was Friday about a month and a half ago. I, of course, didn't come back with a disclaimer. And for that, I do apologize and have apologized.
There are people who maybe think you're still drinking beer at this new place of employment.
You know what? And honestly, not a bad way to go.
We asked listeners on Facebook if they could ask Kai Rizdal any question, what would it be? Here are some of the responses. Nick writes, who picks the music for Marketplace and how do you decide what to play every day? Obviously, besides the music you play when you do the numbers.
Mm-hmm. Well, as I said, our director, her name is Millie Jefferson, picks the music. But anybody who fills in for her picks what we call the bridges and bumpers and stings that give us our musical identity. We post it on the Marketplace website every day because people ask us for our playlists. And it's something that people give a lot of thought to.
Here's a question I really like. You may want to evade it, but Michael asked, name three people you think should be in jail.
Wow. Yeah, no, I'm not going there. I think you could run down the list of usual suspects. Yeah, and that's as far as I'm going.
All right. Phil writes, I'd ask him how he feels about plugging books on his show. More than once, I've heard a certain curtness and snark when interviewing people who it seems he does not believe their books to be worth reading, including Cass Sunstein, Simpler, Charlie LaBeouf, Detroit, An American Autopsy, and Amy Webb, Data, a Love Story in recent months.
Wow, that's so interesting. Okay, those are three very distinct interviews, and I'll take them in the order they were mentioned. Cass Sunstein was the director of the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs at the White House.
He was the man who made all those czar positions.
Yeah, well, yeah, he helped in the creation. It's the office that signs off on federal regulations. And we had an interview in which he was stiff and not willing to acknowledge that perhaps his book had a partisan bias.
He's a longtime Democrat.
And I called him on it, and he repeatedly rejected it. And then and that was it. I mean, I think if you call me curt or snarky for holding authors' feet to the fire, then I will plead guilty to that because that's my job. The Charlie LaDuff interview was an awesome interview. I thought it was really good for one reason. Charlie LaDuff, formerly from the New York Times, now for a television station in Detroit, is a writer who can – he knows his way around a sentence, right? I mean, he can write like nobody's business. And he wrote evocatively about his experiences in Detroit. And I asked him at the end of the book whether what he was doing – because this was a tale of dead bodies found and his sister being raped and murdered and all kinds of horrible things. I asked him whether he thought this book wasn't what has come to be called when people are talking about Detroit, ruin porn or disaster porn. I asked him in those words, and he, in essence, yelled at me. And he said in very strong terms, not at all. We're talking about people and blood, and that's the way this
most
is.
Most serious authors don't like to be linked to porn.
Well, but here's what happened. We left that in the edited version. Intentionally, I told my producer I wanted that part in, and it was, I believe, the most evocative part of that interview. There was no disrespect intended. It was a legitimate question that he responded to genuinely, I believe.
Richard asks, as a formal naval aviator, please ask Kai what he – well, let me get the dangling modifier here. You're the former naval aviator.
Correct it on the fly, Mike.
Please ask Kai what he flew and off what ship.
I flew E-2C Hawkeyes off the USS Theodore Roosevelt, CVN-71, from 1986 to 1990.
And we will return and hear more from you, our listeners, and also take your phone calls. We're with Kai Rizdal, the host and producer, senior editor, of Marketplace. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny, and we're talking with Kai Rizdal. Those are the things that happen when you have your magic microphone.
Live radio.
Yeah, live radio. No net here. No editing. We're live, and we're interactive, and we're going to take your calls here in just a moment. And I mentioned that Kai Rizdal, since 2005, has been the host of the half-hour American Public Media program on business and the economy, Marketplace, heard by some 5 million listeners. About, well, close to 7% of that audience is right here at KQED.
Yep.
Where he once worked and once served as an intern. Speaking about serving, we think of ourselves as public servants because we're in public broadcasting. I got to tell you, we were talking a little bit about the fact that we could do a whole hour just on interviewing. And the fact is, and it's frustrating to both of us, so let's just get it out there. The fact that people hear sometimes things that we don't even say, or that they think we've said when we didn't say, or things that we had said on another program but they think we should be saying on that program, and on and on it goes. And there's a lot of flack catching for things that are not deserved.
Or what you and I believe, and I'm sure every journalist out there believes, is their job. First of all, and I'm going to guess you agree with this, you just have to accept the fact that people are going to hear things that don't actually happen on the radio, and you move on.
Resign to it.
Yeah. But the other part of it is that our job, is to when people say things that are not right, when people say things that are misleading, when people say things that are not true, to call them on it. Or, in certain examples, to make sure that a radio audience understands the circumstances in which things happen. And I'll give you an example. We had the good fortune to interview President Obama about a year and a half ago. The White House called us on a Tuesday and said, listen, if you can be in Nevada on Thursday afternoon at 1, you can have 20 minutes with the president. And we said, sure, of course. And that adventure of interviewing the president is a story and a half in and of itself. But cut to the interview.
Be in your memoir.
Yeah, that's right. But cut to the interview for a second. I was asking him about what was going on in the Republican primary and what his Republican opponents were saying about his economic program. And he looked at me. And remember, obviously, we're on the radio. He looked at me and he kind of went, meh. Except he didn't say the meh part, right? He shrugged. And so I said to him on the air, I said, you shrug, but seriously, Mr. President, answer the question. I caught unbelievable amount of flack.
Disrespectful
to the president. Yeah. Not showing the proper deference to the office, rude to a guest on my program. And my answer to you was, listen, how are you supposed to know what happened when he shrugged on a radio show? But come on, it's the president of the United States. I'm not supposed to call him when he kind of gaffs me off?
And in fact, there are probably all too many interviewers who have thought, boy, I'm so lucky to have this 20 minutes with himself. How can I even challenge him, or how can I get mad at me and all that sort of thing? So you have no regrets?
No, not at all. Although I will mention that we have not been back to the White House since, but that's neither here nor there.
Well, neither is to have a smile at a few other people can mention. Let me go to our calls here. And Frank, you're up first. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, the reason I was calling was you guys asked for the tone of the show. A phrase or a word that sets the tone of the show.
Well, I asked.
I listen to Marketplace every day, and my daughter is in the car every time I listen. And every time, every day, she hears Kai's voice, she says, "What's up, Europe?"
So that's a segment we do. We started about 6 or 8 months ago in the European debt crisis, and we went around and we had a British guy who works in the office, John Buckley, our foreign editor, one of our interns, and then another guy who literally is a surfer dude but has made the transition to public radio. And so it goes, in 3 seconds, it goes, "What's up, Europe? What's up, Europe?" And then the last guy is, "Sup, Europe?" And it's just, it's a nice little, you know, way to make light of what's going on. Over
and
there.
Your daughter will get a British accent out of it.
Right.
Thanks, Frank, for that call. Actually, you got a new, how long is the safety net? Show us your safety net, this local story thing that you've been doing. How long has that been going?
Oh, not all that long. It's a new thing out of our Wealth and Poverty Desk. One of our reporters, Chrissy Clark, is working on the story about, it's called Show Me Your Safety Net, because...
Show me, excuse me.
Yeah, it's, you know, the fact of the matter is that many, many, many of us have safety nets that we either don't understand or don't know about or want to acknowledge. And we're trying to make sure everybody understands what happens in this society when you don't have a safety net.
Good morning, your calls. Nancy joins us. Morning, Nancy.
Hi. I listen to Marketplace every day I possibly can, and I enjoy Kai and the upbeatness of most of the show. But I think it's time that we did something about a labor show. There's a business section in the paper. There's no labor section. There's nothing on the radio about labor, and I am very disappointed in this. Labor unions are losing members right and left. There's big companies are not letting people unionize, and none of this is really covered anywhere. I think it'd be nice to have Robert Reich on, you know, talking about labor also. I think he'd be great. And anyways, that's my comment.
Thank you for the comment, Nancy. Robert Reich is on the broadcast once a month. He is, of course, a former Secretary of Labor. But we do no small amount of labor coverage, and we talked about it in the first half hour of this show. Jeff Tyler from our Wealth and Poverty Desk went out to Chicago and spent weeks investigating labor abuses by big companies out there. We do labor policy stories out of Washington. NPR does them as well. I mean, you'll hear them on All Things Considered in Morning Edition, but you have to balance coverage, I think, is the short answer.
And Nancy, thank you for the call, and let me get another caller on. Landry, good morning.
Good morning. Hi. Big fan. So I used to live in Las Vegas, and I would hear about the 2008 financial crisis after working at a news channel in Vegas, but I'd always turn on Marketplace to find out what was going on with the foreclosure crisis. I wanted to ask what was Kai's favorite or most personal story from the financial crisis and what affected him most.
Man, that's a really good question. I think the short answer is this, and it's a little bit off the beaten path, but in 2008 and 2009, I had been at Marketplace for 7 years. I had been on Marketplace, the afternoon show, for three. I was, I hoped, reasonably confident in my continued employment there. But even I, as I was delivering this news, had a niggle and a worry in the back of my mind that there would come a day when companies and underwriters and people who donate money to public radio would be so scared, would be so nervous, would be so reluctant to part with their money in those times that maybe the enterprise of public radio and Marketplace as we knew it would not be around. I mean, it's really hard to remember how scary that time was, but believe me when I tell you, all of us felt it.
Let me thank Landry for the call. Well, you're getting a lot of love here, a lot of fans, a lot of appreciation. You want to hear some stuff from the other side?
Yes, please.
Well, first of all, one listener says, Kenya took issue with Kai's tweet before the show that read, "Hey, San Francisco, I'm on KQED Forum in 5 minutes." Kenya tweeted to remind Kai that Forum reaches the Sacramento Valley, the whole Bay Area. He says, "I'm a big fan of Marketplace. Just wanted to get a bit of NorCal props from a SoCal journo."
Absolutely true. I will say only in my defense that when I was here, lo, these many years ago, KQED had not grown to where it is today, and which is a remarkable testament.
We're on Sirius now.
I know. None of that happened back in 2000.
All over the world. It's a global village.
Yep.
But here's some, critiques. Let me get your response to these. This is listener Klain, who writes, "I appreciate Kai's wry smarts. At the same time, I find myself cringing at most of his commentary. Economics affects all of everyday experience and thus needs to be seriously questioned. In contrast, Kai seems like a court jester prancing for the evil animated cadaver of the corporate estate, amusing, affably, pithy, but ultimately a lightweight. Too bad. I've not collected glaring examples, but many are the times my mouth has hung open in shock as Kai completely fails to ask the important but painful question or jokes with some ogre of finance. Assumptions about the issues at the heart of our lives deserves careful scrutiny, but Kai doesn't do those numbers." And add to that one other from Jason.
Sure.
"I was wondering why your paradigm for the real estate industry..." No, wait a minute. That's not the one.
Different one.
Jim says, "I often wonder if I'm aged out of anything contemporary. Marketplace is a case in point. While I like Kai Rizdahl's lively reporting, there are times when the style aspects of Marketplace get in the way of the content. Is Marketplace directed at a younger, hipper audience?"
I'm 49 years old. I'm going to be 50 in October. We are not trying to find a younger, hipper audience. We're trying to find an audience that is interested in what happens in business and the economy in this country every single day. Because as we learned in the past 5 years, if you don't know what's going on inside the black box that is the American economy and Wall Street, we will all suffer for it. To the prior point, I obviously take exception to some of the characterizations of my behavior, but I will agree with her final point that what we need to do is to understand what's going on out there. And I try best as I can to get answers from people. When they don't answer, I ask again. But sometimes people aren't willing to take those questions, you know?
Another listener asks, "Work-life balance, big issue for our generation." He means 49.
Yeah.
"I've heard Kai has four kids. How does balance his hosting work with his family and personal life?"
I get up really early in the morning, and the beauty of being in Los Angeles is that I can be home not too late in the afternoon. We start really early at Marketplace. We start at 7 o'clock in the morning. We've got an overnight shift that works on our morning show. We get the handoff from them. We have a morning staff meeting at 7:30. We're off and running. The show goes on the air at 2 o'clock down in L.A., to hit drive time on the East Coast. Some stations carry it live. Some people record it and take it when they want. But by the time we're all done for the day at 4:15 at Marketplace, you know, the East Coast is closed, right? And unless there's breaking news, which, of course, we will do the show over again if we have to. But most of the times, there's not much going on after that, and that helps quite a bit.
Well, let's read some more laudatory remarks.
You know, give me the hard ones, too.
It's a mix. Sarah, anybody who is a public figure gets a mix.
I know.
Sarah says, if I were to pick a word to describe Marketplace, it would be down to earth. I teach an introduction to business class at a local community college. Each week, I use at least one story from Marketplace to explain current events to my students. You explain complicated issues to the everyman so they can be understood. I greatly appreciate that and love your show. Thank you. Emily writes on our website, Marketplace was a singular reason why I started paying attention to business news and American economic issues and policy. This is from someone who used to not give a fig about such subjects. I listen to Marketplace every day when I can. It's thanks to Kai and his wonderful irreverence, by the way. It is not L.A. sounding. And Josh writes, I listen to Marketplace at least once a day. Sometimes I catch the rebroadcast. I have to say that he has struck the balance between geek and cool. It's hard to really nail, but he's obviously well-educated, but also seems to be the tip of cool. I'm not gay, but I question myself when I hear his voice on the radio. I definitely date him.
Thank you.
And Alex writes, the adjective to describe Kai Rizdahl is cheeky. Kai is a smart aleck kid sitting in the back of the class, and you're the teacher. He plays to his audience and the other students in the back of the class, but as a teacher, you realize his cracks show such wit and integrity that you can bring yourself to go over to him and whack him with a ruler. you find you want to laugh, too, but you feel you can't let yourself, and you admire the content of his remarks.
Let me say two very quick things. The first is that, and I'm gratified by this, I've not heard the word glib out of any of these comments yet, which is nice, and I appreciate that because we are trying to be irreverent. We are trying to be witty, and we are trying to make people understand why this stuff matters. But we try really hard not to cross the line into glib because it is the subject matter is of such import.
Where does that line cross for you? What constitutes glibness?
Me and Potter Stewart.
It's like pornography.
It's like porn.
I'll know when I see it.
Yeah. So when I sit down and I write the show, as you know, when you write for radio, if you're doing it right, you're speaking out loud as you type the words. And if something sounds off, you know it, and you can hear it. And that's when you have to go back and change things around.
Hemingway had a good name for that. He called it the BS detector.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I buy that.
It's just, well, let me get to some more calls. Kay is joining us from Santa Cruz. Kay, hi.
Hi. Hi, Michael. Hi, Kai.
Hi.
I'm a huge fan of both your shows, and I love listening to Marketplace when I drive back home. And I have a question regarding college students. And, you know, I'm a college student, and I'm going to graduate this year. And I was wondering if Kai has any advice to offer for the people who are joining the workforce this year.
Yeah, a couple of very quick thoughts. One is my apologies and sympathies on your student loan. That is the big next crisis, I believe, coming in this economy. There's $1 trillion worth of student loan debt out there. But in terms of advice, I'll give you only this. And obviously, it's a different time from when I got out of school. But it stems from my first days here as an intern at KQED. And that is never say no, right? Take every opportunity, work your tail off. And eventually you will be recognized as ambitious and smart and driven because that's what, honestly, that's what kept me going around here.
That's good advice. Thank you for the call. Did you ever see that thing that went viral? It was on YouTube where all these people in this company are scrambling to get this guy because he has a degree in communications.
No, I never
it's
saw.
It's pretty funny. You know, we know you've been busy and we just have to talk to you. We saw your resume and this degree in communications is what we're looking for, what we're after. And we know you have student debt, but we can make that. I mean, it's funny, but at the same time, it's cutting into something really very profound.
Oh, yeah.
Let me get another caller on here. And that's Allison up in Sonoma. Hi, Allison.
Hi. I'm so glad to hear your voices. I have two teenage daughters, and one's favorite celebrity is Charles Kelly, Lady Antebellum. The other is Adam Levine, but mine is Kai Rizdahl. We listen to you all the time and talk about you at the dinner table every night. So thank you for all you do and your wittiness and cleverness, and you're greatly appreciated.
Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you for that. You get a lot of these crushes, don't you?
It's about the microphones. It's all about those microphones at Marketplace, and they make me sound nice. I'll tell you a very quick story. So my wife got sick and tired of all these, you know, her friends saying, oh, you're so great on the radio and this and that. And then she went out and she did a Google search on me, and she came up with this one that said, Kai Rizdahl used to be my favorite host in public radio, and then I saw his picture.
So there you go. How to hurt a guy make you humble. Yeah. Richard is our next caller. Richard, join us.
Thanks so much, Michael. I can't believe that I get to speak with both of you at the same time. You're two of my absolute favorite people on the planet for broadcasting. Anyway, Michael, you asked for a word to describe the show, and I listen to you every day, Kai.
Thank you.
Just like I listen to Michael. I have to put a modifier on it. I was going to say enigmatic, and then I kind of remembered what that actually means. And I want to say seemingly enigmatic, because you make the mysterious unmysterious. There isn't a question really afterwards. It's easier to take, and it's easier to hear, and it's much more enjoyable. You both also share another quality, which is that for a guy like me, a grandfather, someone who tries to keep my hand in, I'm also a teacher, that you're both guys that I would love to have a beer with, but also could enjoy a good meal and a fine wine, as well as step onto the mat and bow to honorably.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah,
that was
that's very
kind.
Indeed. Thank you. I don't know if we get a dinner invitation out of that, but here's a Facebook comment from Rochelle. It's received a handful of likes. I'd love to hear Kai Rizdahl rap the numbers.
Yeah, that's, you know what? She's not the first one who said that. I think it's going to be a while before that happens. But
would Michael please ask Kai to talk about the terrific program he did on Frontline, Big Sky, Big Money?
Oh, yeah.
How did that project come about? And thank you. Please, I listen to Marketplace and Forum every day and get so much from both programs. Thank you. Yeah,
we have been trying. Marketplace has been trying for years to work with Frontline because they are an exceptional journalism organization, and we finally made it work about a year ago. Went to Boston for some meetings, talked to some of their producers, and they said, listen, we've got this story on campaign finance out of Montana and the unregulated money that flows into some of these organizations and how it's being spent, not at the federal level where there's so much scrutiny, but at the state level, especially in a state like Montana, where a small amount of money can sway these state and local elections, which is where fundamental change happens. So I spent a good part of the summer and fall in and out of Montana and Washington, D.C., reporting and working on this story and working with some really talented producers at Frontline. It aired actually 6 months ago yesterday, and it was well-received and immensely gratifying.
You did a piece, I think it was a few years ago, in The Atlantic about the environment.
Yeah, very quick piece in their ideas issue about 2-3 years ago. They're another great organization that we're working on partnering with. And Jim Fallows, who writes for The Atlantic, is going to do some stuff.
One of my favorite guests.
Yeah, he's great. And we're excited about that as well.
Get another caller on here. We'll go to Oakland and we'll welcome Paul. Hi, Paul.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I think Marketplace does a pretty good job covering labor issues and, you know, mentioning unions and, you know, in light of the fact it's International Workers' Day today. I think a good story would be the lack of real, you know, union labor coverage in the media in general. Newspapers don't have labor beats anymore. Radio doesn't have much in the way of labor or union programming. And, you know, if you look at it in terms of another story would be how you have the UC system has funding for their business schools, which is pretty much guaranteed, and yet UC Berkeley Labor Center or other UCLA, where they produce some pretty great information and research about labor issues and workplace issues, they are battling for funding every year. So I think that's a good story. And I think that Marketplace does a pretty good job, but we need more.
And speaking of more, thank you for that call. Anthony says, business stories often ignore labor and make business reporting a sport centered on the actions of corporations. But the recent stories with ProPublica on the labor market for undocumented immigrants were a welcome exception. Very well told. More of this, please.
All right. Noted.
Noted.
Yep.
Jenny on Facebook says, Kai, you have the best voice in radio. Krasny's, on the other hand, is nasal and bad. No, she wants to know, what type, if any, of voice or speak training do you have?
None. And in point of fact, I have a rule about being on the radio, and it goes like this. If you think about how you sound on the radio while you are on the radio, you will inevitably screw it up. I try really hard not to think about any of this stuff. It drives my producers crazy, as they will be the first to tell you, but I can't do it any other way.
Claudine wants to know, how can I get a job working with you?
We have internship programs, and there are job postings at the American Public Media, I think.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah.
Carl says, how do you reporters and producers visualize your audience? How do you approach topics that many in your audience lack foundational knowledge of?
Interesting question. So we have, as do many media organizations, an audience research department, so to speak, such as it is. I think it's like a guy and a half, basically. So we
it's
have
a
the
guy and a half more than we have.
Yeah, well, yeah. We have the demographics, and we have all of those kinds of things. And honestly, we try our best to anticipate listeners so that the labor stories are a great one. I mean, we know there's great labor interest in labor stories in this economy, and so we go out and find those kinds of things. But basically, we try to offer something for everybody. You know, I mean, you can't know what people are going to want, but you can give it your best shot.
Alan writes, please ask Mr. Rizal whether Marketplace has an explicit policy not to air economists outside the orthodox positions. Does Marketplace deliberately attempt to be centrist and to define that center between two standard viewpoints, deficit hawks and deficit doves? I think it would be hugely interesting and beneficial to air so-called deficit owls, the practitioners of what is called modern monetary theory, people like James K. Galbraith, Randall Ray, and Warren Mosler.
Mm-hmm. We've had Galbraith on the program. The other two, we have not. There is no explicit policy about anything at Marketplace other than to tell the truth and help people understand what's going on out there. Because I know I sound like a broken record, but you cannot find truth in what we do by saying, well, Republicans say this and Democrats say this, Keynesians say this and Hayekians say this. That's not where you find truth. It's not he said, she said. It's in the totality of what we, all of us, do. If you read the New York Times editorial page, you have to read the Wall Street Journal editorial page.
But you're often dealing with economics. Let's put it bluntly. This is a dismal science.
You
this is something that you can't empirically verify or take a position on that's anything other than often changeable, fluid, mercurial, and squiggly.
At best.
Right. There we have it. And here's somebody with an unorthodox suggestion. Joanne, good morning. Or is it Johan?
Johan.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Michael, good morning. I was just wondering, I had a little pitch here. I'm hoping there's some producers with some ears pricking up at this. I would love to see a show swap, Stephen Colbert, Bill O'Reilly style, between Kai Rizdahl and Michael Krasny, and or just you guys co-host the show together, because to hear both your voices, it's just alpha and omega. I'll take my comments.
I don't know if I could do 2 hours, man. I got about a half an hour radio in me every day.
Every day, I don't know if I can do 2 hours, but here I am. John is joining us next. John, you're on.
Hi, good morning. I wanted to make the point, I would like to see more of those hard stories, the ones that don't make us feel so good, because it's almost like Chicken Little and the sky is falling. We don't want to know about it, but it's the only way things are going to change. And, you know, if you think of capitalism being the worst form of economic models, except for all others, mm-hmm. The only way we're going to change and evolve is if we know about what's wrong and where there's corruption, where there's aspects that continue to happen. You know, everyone thought after the Great Recession that there was going to be real change in our banking institute, and yet everybody walked away sort of with the attitude of like, wow, it didn't get me. You know, I survived. I lived. So I'd like to see more of Marketplace, you know, doing the muckraking.
All right, another good suggestion for you to take under advisement, Kai Rizdahl?
I think that is a good one. The short answer is we are not staffed to do investigative work, although that is an ambition of ours. Just to the point of how things didn't change after the financial crisis, that is fundamentally, and we've done it, and we will continue to do it, but it is fundamentally a political story, right? I mean, Congress is paralyzed, and so the running of the American economy is being held in abeyance.
Let me thank the caller. Go to some more of your emails. Jason says, I was wondering why your paradigm for the real estate industry is always that when prices go up, it's a good thing. Don't you ever consider looking at it from the opposite, that every time prices go up, the majority of Americans are less able to afford a place to live?
Yes, and we have done those stories. I will tell you, there is a countervailing opinion, though, that goes like this. When home prices go up, as they did last month, reported yesterday in the Case-Shiller Home Price Index, there is that knock-on effect of the wealth effect. People feeling their houses are worth more and thus being more willing to spend in this economy. And if, as we've said repeatedly, there is one thing that is going to help this economy, it will be consumers feeling liberated enough economically to spend. Now, there are many, many, many moving parts, both in the American economy and in the housing market. So pure up is good, down is bad, and vice versa is one of many things to think about.
Listener wants to know about Tess Vigeland. Her departure was a loss to the Marketplace franchise. Vigeland, excuse me.
Tess Vigeland. She hosted our money show, our show on personal finance, theirs on the weekends for a number of years. She got there about the same time I did to work on the morning show. She said after 10 years at Marketplace, it was time to do something else, is the short answer.
And Annie writes on our website, excuse me, I listened to a news program after Apple earnings came out, and And he talked about how they missed their earnings. While Kai did talk about this on Marketplace the first day, he actually kind of soft-soaped it. He mentioned Apple's earnings, but cast it in a positive way, unlike the day after when he did talk about the miss. Could Kai comment on this?
Sure I can. It happened actually after the bell, which means after 1 o'clock in the afternoon, Los Angeles time. We go on the air at 2. We decided editorially at that point in the day that what it deserved was a mention and copy, and we would follow up more the second day. The fact of the matter is that Apple made more in a quarter revenue-wise than Google makes in a year. And so to say that, I think it was $13 billion, but don't quote me on that, what was disappointing or amiss, I think, is to sort of abandon the larger perspective.
Ever take on these CEO salaries? You think of what Tim Cook makes or what the CEO of Walmart makes as opposed to the average laborer and that sort of thing? A lot is made of it, certainly. A lot is made of it.
And my final note yesterday on the broadcast was the company with the biggest disparity in in CEO versus regular worker pay was JCPenney, Ron Johnson, who got fired about, 3 weeks ago.
We've only got about half a minute here, but Adam has a rather profound question. Adam, shoot.
Yeah, you guys do a great job. Thank you very much for what you do. But I do have a question for both of you, and that is, what do you guys think about radio as a medium in the future to get information out to people?
Here's the thing. I think we in public broadcasting and in radio writ large have to have one concern, and that is audio. We have to own the audio and then dispense it to people in whatever form and on whatever platform they want to get it. I will provide the content. You guys decide how you want to get it, and then we'll be all set.
Well said. Couldn't have been said better. Thank you for being with us. Ongoing success.
Pleasure.
Glad to have you back.
Nice to be here.
Kai Risdahl. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Our engineer actually today is Rob Spate, and our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks. Senior editor is Dan Zoll. Executive producer is Raul Ramirez. And I want to remind you that you can continue this discussion by going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment. I'll be back on the morrow. We'll be talking to Congresswoman Jackie Speier in the first hour, and then Jim Wallace, a famed theologian and evangelical spiritual advisor to President Obama. Hope you will join us for that. Thank you for joining us today. For all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.